BuckeyeRadio.com presents a fan's perspective on Notre Dame sports. This is Dome and Domer.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer, joining me, Ed Jordanic. And for the next 15 minutes, we're going to talk about, I don't know, what do you talk about after a loss to Navy? Well, let's just start right on the hottest topic of the day, which is, all right, now what? You just lost to Navy for the second time in 45 years. And one guy has lost to him twice. That certainly can't help Charlie Weiss, that's for sure.
No, Mike, it can't. And I feel like this is going to be about the 14th Dome and Domer show I've done today because of all the conversations with people in the last day and a half or so about Charlie, about the game on Saturday.
Let's try this. Pinning it down to, I mean, if you were to ask me, okay, and believe me, I'm a guy that has stood for Charlie Weiss for quite a while. I mean, look at where the program is today versus where it was with Willingham. Clearly, it's in a much better shape. Now, having said that, how do you evaluate Charlie Weiss as a head coach? Well, clearly the biggest question mark and the biggest noose around his neck, I think, is his inability to get players emotionally ready for football games. And I think that's what you saw on Saturday, was the lack of that.
Yeah, I think that's really fair. And I think that that is the theme that runs through things. It's consistent with some of what people who I talked to saw in the way that the team came out and played. It's consistent with some of the things that I've heard since then in terms of, and it's consistent with some of the statements after the game from some of the players. And it does, playing to the level of your competition, either down or up, usually is not the sign of a very mature, emotionally mature football team. And we can debate the merits of Charlie on a lot of different levels, but tone starts at the top, and it just does not seem like he has gotten the hang of being a head college football coach. Again, our standards are pretty high. We want the whole package, right? We want the charisma of Era.
Yeah, but
the losses of Leahy with the humor of Holtz and the press and the PR of Holtz. I mean, you know, we're looking for, we have a pretty high kind of composite in our head.
Right. And my argument for having that high of a standard and having that high of an expectation is that he's paid pretty highly.
Oh, I mean, yes.
You know, it's not like Charlie Weiss isn't being paid real well to coach Notre Dame football. So
I'm not for a second saying the standard is unfair. I'm just saying that that's the
yeah, and I think that, and it is, and I think regardless of what anybody wants to say, there clearly are some things that he does very well, and one of them is recruiting. There's no doubt that we have some talent on that football team, and probably that's the biggest problem for everybody to come to grips with is how does a team like us, with the kind of talent that we have, lose to a team like Navy?
And that's what's so frustrating, because we were griping about the talent level 2 years ago, and we thought that the execution and the leadership wasn't there. In other words, 2 years ago, what we wanted was greater talent, and the reason that we were so upset with Weiss is because even though the talent level was low, we didn't play like Navy plays. We didn't seem to be playing with smarts and heart at a lot of different times. Now that we have the talent, it seems like those things still that have unfortunately become, you know, when John McLeod was the basketball coach at Notre Dame, unfortunately the things that you could count on was poor free throw shooting, and turnovers. I mean, those, if you
right.
had to
coach him.
right. If you had to encapsulate his program in kind of two statistics, it would have been that. And, you know, that starts at the top. I mean, you know, the things that you emphasize kind of are the things that either make you or break you. in the games. And let's also get something out of the way here. I mean, the fact of the matter is that this, when Robbie Parris fumbled the ball in the first quarter, it all kind of played out in front of my eyes the rest of the game. Because the fact of the matter is Notre Dame fumbled the ball a fair amount this year, but they recovered most of them. They've kicked 14 field goals in a row. The many bounces have gone their way. They were due for a game like this where things did not necessarily go their way, and they just did not step up and overcome those things when they needed to. In the red zone, on defense, I mean, there was...
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, when people want to... Because obviously you draw the comparisons immediately, and clearly the it's interesting because the most polar opposite you could pick, in my mind, would be Lou Holtz. And the reason is Lou Holtz was not a very smart, technical X and O guy. He really didn't know the game of college football that well. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he didn't know the game, but he didn't know the X's and O's as well.
I beg to differ. He had a completely different. He may not have had the quote unquote and sophistication. Look at part of the problem with Charlie is I think he overthinks some.
He's over sophisticated, right? And that's the point I'm trying to make is Holtz was able to make up for it because he was an unbelievable master manipulator. He could get any kid to play well above what he's capable of playing because he was unbelievable in being able to motivate college football players. And I think that what Charlie has found out and what we're finding out is you almost can't coach in college football unless you have that ability. This is not the pros where it's a matter of preparation and showing the game plan and saying, go out and execute this. You have to motivate kids to go out and do it and basically play above. And I think the mark of a good coach is the following. One, win the games you're supposed to win, and then two, steal a game here or there once a year. And all good coaches do that. They win the games they're supposed to win, and then somehow they find a way to win games they shouldn't win. And they somehow pull it off. And I think in looking at that, you just look at Weiss and you say, all right, you know, for me personally, this past Saturday has been the first time where I'm finally willing to say, okay, you know what? I'm willing to throw the towel in. And I haven't up to this point in the last 4.5 years, but unfortunately I'm at that point now.
And I think what's so frustrating, Mike, is that Saturday, we, for the first time in 3 years, right, we really have something to play for. I mean, a BCS game is something to play for, right? I mean, a 10-2 record, a game against a team that would probably be ranked ahead of us, that would be, I mean, he would have kept his job. I'm not saying he's definitely going to lose it, but he definitely would have kept his job at 10-2 and a BCS game. And he definitely, I think, could have looked back and made a very strong case for making progress, taking this program up a notch. If you know, and that's I think what really gets to people is Saturday, you know, running out of that tunnel, there was a hell of a lot to play for. And you know, the mistakes and you know, I mean, there's a lot of different things that you can point to, but I think that's what's so frustrating is it wasn't this wasn't Syracuse last year. This wasn't, you know, USC last year.
Yeah, and it wasn't so much, no, you're right. And I think it's not even so much that it's 10-2 and us playing for a BCS game. I mean, I would hope that somebody made mention of the fact that Navy came into our house 2 years ago and
true.
Beat us.
Yeah, good point.
I mean, there are all kinds of reasons why you should have been fired up.
Right.
10-2 and BCS, yeah, I agree with that, but what about, I mean, it's not like we didn't have the motivation that, hey, these guys took you out 2 years ago for the first time in 44 years.
In our house.
Yeah, and basically put a huge damper on the season that we then never could recover from.
Right.
So there were all kinds of reasons for us to be fired up for this game and ready, and Weiss had plenty of ammunition to do that. And they literally came out flat. There's no doubt about it. I didn't, you know, I was actually going to try and get Towner on this call just because he was in the stadium. And but from what I could see, I mean, we were flat until the fourth quarter when we finally got the ball back to try and score that touchdown and then hold them. I mean, it.
But you know what? Maybe we were flat, and maybe that explains the mistakes. But the bottom line is that if you would have told any of us before the game, Notre Dame is not going to punt, Navy is going to score three touchdowns, we would have said, take it to the bank, 35-21, or right. 38-24, or what? I mean, I would have taken that in a heartbeat because we knew that. I mean, Navy is a very accomplished offensive football team with a style that is pretty difficult to defend, and I would have taken three touchdowns on Saturday morning right away. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And I think that, I mean.
On their part, not on
right,
ours.
Right, exactly. I don't think, you know, as much as everybody wants to hang the defense out, a couple things. One is, unfortunately, I think a lot of people found out that Brian Smith is not that good.
Yeah.
He had a horrible game.
Terrible game.
I mean, I watched some of the replay and I thought, oh my God, you were just completely lost. And I don't like to single guys out, but unfortunately, my friend, you were lost. So he got exposed in a big way and clearly that hurt. Now, I distinctly remember Holtz playing against Navy in this whole situation, and on several occasions our corners would blitz. And I mean, I just out of, you know, they would mix it up and our corners would come flying in just to cause some disruption. And every now and then it would result in a bad pitch or something. And none of that happened. And it was almost like we got a little bit predictable on defense. But, you know, there's all kinds of arguments. The fact of the matter is they only gave up three scores. And if you would have told me at the beginning of this game that we're going to only give up 21 points on defense, I'd say that's enough to win.
Yep.
Oh, it's not definitely. Great, but it's definitely enough to win.
Definitely.
And
but
we
the
just
thing is, and we talked about this last week, is that with, you know, with a team like Navy, you have to get on top of them right. I mean, you know, they did not stop Notre Dame all day. We stopped ourselves.
Oh, stopped ourselves.
So, yeah. And it's just so predictable. That's how Navy can beat you, is if they get a lead and basically go into their four corners, and you're unable to stop them. Now I thought, you know, I mean, we forced them to punt, you know, four or five times, I think. So, you know, three, four times. So the defense, I think you're right. Listen, our defense is obviously not our strength, but they did enough, to win the football game, even though they couldn't stop their fullback. You know, it's a puzzle to me how, you know, I mean, it sounds like, you know, there was frustration on defense too, but, we wouldn't even be talking about the defense today. We would have been like, oh, you know, whatever. They kind of, you know, we kind of got away with it because, you know, Navy got their 300 yards rushing, but, you know, they completed one pass and we got out of there and, you know, scored our five touchdowns and won. But, you know.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, you can't blame the defense for this one. As much as everybody says, and I agree, I mean, this whole entire season, our nemesis has been giving up the big third down conversion play, right. And we definitely gave it up to Navy, but we still did play good enough. And, you know, one of the other things, and I think this is just a product of the game, but, you know, clearly the turning point in the game for me was Clawson fumbling there on the 1 yard line. At that point, I knew right then and there we were going to lose.
Yep.
It was then that I thought, oh God. But
you
know,
tell me what you think about that.
Here's what I think, because this is really interesting, because I do think something happened there, and here's what I think. I think that right then and there, Clawson knew that, oh my God, we have, not only were we going to run no huddle offense, but I got to score before the end of the third quarter, because if I don't, we're going to go into the fourth quarter and possibly lose this game. And so here he is scrambling, thinking that he's got to get in the end zone before the end of the third quarter. And a couple things. One, the reason he didn't lower his shoulder and plow through is because of his toe. You can't push off and drive when your toe's basically broken.
Well, then he's got to be smart enough to slide.
Right, and that's my point. The reason he didn't slide is because he felt like he had to score the touchdown before the end of the third quarter. That's how much pressure he felt on himself from the standpoint of Navy just dragging it out. And for whatever reason, it's just one of those, you know, competitive things that all of a sudden you take it into your own hands. He couldn't drive because of his foot. He then tries to cut back, and he gets basically clobbered. And you know, as he's going down, fumbles the football.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a couple. There were a couple things about that. I mean, yeah, I don't know about what how he can, you know, what the you know, he ran. Listen, he ran well enough to get down there. To me, it seems like somebody at some point this season would have had to take him inside and say, listen, we want you, you know, you're our most valuable asset. We want you to slide. If you're down near the goal line and we call a play for you to, you know, to try and surprise him, or if you find yourself in a running situation, watch Dane Crist. Watch how he lowers his shoulder. Watch how he not only protects the ball, except when he's tearing his ACL, but watch how he protects the ball. But not only that, protects himself. I mean, Clausen's going to get a career-ending injury if he keeps, you know, throwing his body up in the air around the goal line or whatever. You would have thought that just self-preservation and, you know, thinking about the pro dollars, he, you know, somebody would take him aside and say, listen, here's how you handle that situation. If you're going to go in, I mean, Brady knew what to, you know.
No, I know, but I would argue this. My argument would be that, you know what, that's just because that's what Clausen is. He's that much of a competitor. And I really do think that's exactly what happened. He felt like, doggone it, I am not turning this back over to the defense. We don't have enough time for this. I'm taking this in. And, as ill-advised as it was, but I think if he was 100% and his toe wasn't that way, he lowers and he goes in.
But I don't know. I'd maybe buy that if there was like 3 or 4 minutes left in the game or something like that. But I mean, there was a quarter left, and it's not like, you know, it's not like this was for a first, you know, this was a fourth down or anything. I mean, they would have had first and goal inside the five. I mean, he wasn't.
Yeah, I know. It's just one of the, again, I think it's the heat of the moment, battle of the moment. Yeah. It's one of those mistakes you make.
You know, the other thing I feel sorry for, you know, a little bit for Clausen is basically he has no interceptions this year.
Yeah.
I mean, he really doesn't.
He really doesn't. No, he doesn't.
If he wasn't such a freaking accurate thrower, you know, if he throws it a little bit to the right or left, the ball that
goes
incomplete. And if he throws that same thing 10 times, 9 times the ball is going to go straight down to the ground, or it's going to kind of bounce back at him and fall harmlessly. But it kind of hits an upslope on, you know, Floyd's padding or whatever. And you know, I think I said last week when we talked, you know, that yeah, I was glad to have Floyd back, but it wouldn't surprise me if there was one or two miscommunications or that they're out of sync a little bit because he's been gone a while. You know, and sure enough. At the absolute worst possible time, the ball bounces up in the air, and that kid, you know, for Navy, who's always, you know, around the ball, is there to pick it off.
No, that's exactly right. Well, let's talk about this. I mean, obviously, we can sit here and talk for another 20 minutes.
Can I get one thing off my chest real quick, though? Did you see the play before Clausen gets sacked, Sam Young with his BS, you know.
Yeah, there's undercutting the guy. Oh. Well, here's what I thought on that play. Maybe that's designed. Maybe it was a quick out and that's why he was going down. If it wasn't, then that's horrible. That's pathetic for a fourth year guy to do that on a key play like that. If it wasn't called, and if it was, that was pathetic. I agree with you. The only thing, cause I thought the same thing and I'm thinking to myself, what are you doing? Except that if it was called that way, because remember another guy came in earlier on a couple possessions that ended up tipping a ball,
right?
And it could be that that's what he was trying to avoid because he knew it was going to be a fast out, down and out to that side. That could possibly be it. I'm hoping that that's what it was because if it wasn't, that's pathetic.
Yeah.
The only other question I got that I wanted to bring up
was
what was that call? When there was 3 minutes left in the football game, Navy got a first down. The kid runs out of bounds, but yet they start the clock again.
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up because somebody brought that up with me. Here's the rule, and it changed at the beginning of last year. If you remember in 2006, they changed the rules where they started running the clock when the ball was kicked off on kickoffs, and they also there was another rule where the clock ran in a different portion, and there was basically it cut down about 10 plays out of every game. Everybody howled about it, that it was terrible, so then they changed it again, and this is how it's been last year and this year. When a guy runs out of bounds, the clock starts again when the ball is set at the line, except for the last 2 minutes of each half. And then it's the old rule where the clock doesn't start until the ball is snapped. So basically, a team has to be ready to go if they go out of bounds because they've got about whatever 10, 15 seconds until the referee places the ball and then winds the clock. So that's the deal. If it was 3 minutes, that's why the clock started. If it would have been under 2 minutes, it would have been, you know, the old rule where they could have been able to huddle and the ball wouldn't have started, the clock wouldn't have started again until they snapped the ball.
Yeah, I don't know. I just cannot agree with that ruling, even though that's what it was. I mean, you even saw the Navy guys pull that kid aside saying, "What are you doing going out of bounds?"
Right.
I mean, they just right then and there grabbed him like, "What in God's name are you doing?" But in any event, I mean, it clearly hurt us in that start. We literally lost 25 seconds just off that alone.
Yep.
But anyways, you know, let's talk just a little bit about the future here, because obviously what everybody's on their mind is, all right, now what? Do we fire Weiss? And I would argue the following. Number one, if he runs the table and finishes 9-3 and they end up winning a bowl game, you got a lot of scratching of your heads going on as to, all right, now what do we do? However, in light of the situation and knowing what we have in front of us, I don't see this football team running the table.
Boy, there are very few people that I've spoken with who think that will happen. I mean, I do think that he will be retained if they win their last three games. You know, I don't think it's a situation. You know, they can't. It's just too many problems. You know, they can't fire him after the bowl game. You know. That's just too much upheaval and recruiting and getting your guy and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I agree with people who say that Swarbrick needs to be lining somebody, you know, up right now if that's the direction that they're going to go. And I think it'd be awfully hard for him to keep his job if they, you know, if they lose two of their last three. You know, the nightmare scenario, of course, for fans who want him gone, is that they win two of the last three and look pretty good and they lose a squeaker. And, you know, it's kind of that in-between land that we talked about at the beginning of the year of 8-4. You know, there just are not too many people in his corner right now. And I think, you know, I think it all rides on Saturday. I mean, we don't know what for sure. I mean, the indications aren't good about the state of the team right now in terms of, if these guys are questioning their coaches, if they're getting a little bit selfish, if they're worried about their own futures, when things kind of just go up in smoke like they did on Saturday, he's had teams collapse in November before, and we'll know pretty soon. Listen, Pittsburgh's got a lot to play for. It's going to be a full house at Heinz Field. We'll know pretty soon whether these guys are going to be in it, and if they come out and play uninspired football and lose decisively to Pittsburgh, then he's lost the team, and I think that means he's lost his job.
Yeah, I would agree. And I do think that, if you want to question Charlie Weiss and his abilities and lack thereof when it comes to emotionally getting his football players ready, this Saturday is surely the case in point for that. Because if these guys aren't fired up going into this game, they could get clocked. Yep. So we're going to find that out this Saturday. But it's going to be interesting because even if they do win Saturday, you got a game against UConn who almost pulled off a huge upset against the number 5 team in the country. And then you got Stanford who put the whooping on Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
And can you imagine that game out on the West Coast late at night when we're out there like we've always had trouble with in the past? How is he going to pull that one off?
Yeah, and Harbaugh is just – He's had that circled for a while. Plus, they probably have a running game that's top 10 in the country with a big stud running back who just knocks people over and a big experienced offensive line that just pushes people around. It's not too often that you see a team score 51 points. And, you know, they do it throwing the ball 20 times.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, and the thing is that, you know, they did, on a larger version against Oregon, they did what Navy did to us. They ran the ball, and then they completed 12 passes for 260 yards. You know, so it sets up the play action and they hit people deep. We don't defend that kind of an offense, a run first, pass second offense very well. So, yeah, it doesn't, on paper right now, these last 3 weeks of the season don't look too promising for this team and for this coach.
Yeah, well, he definitely has his work cut out for him, that's for sure. In any event, we're going to cut it off there, but obviously there'll be plenty more to talk about the rest of the season, so we'll be back for sure. Don't worry about that. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanic, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.